Is this on?
Okay, there we go. Sorry. Why are they called the minor prophets?
They're under 18.
You shouldn't be driving on Route 66. Yes, exactly. Shorter, not less important. That's great. That's great. We just have less of them. We have less of their writings, less of their words. They somewhat follow, roughly, they follow kind of a chronology of the history of Israel too. Hosea, Joel, and Amos are before exile. Jonah, Micah, and Nahum really have to do with, well, and Obadiah has to do with Edom, but those second three have to do with Nineveh and the Assyrians, because it's Assyrians that come in and take over, just like Hosea, Joel, and Amos said they would. And then Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk, Zephaniah, there we start getting to in exile. It's Habakkuk's going, Lord, why are you doing this? And then at the end, you've got Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi that are dealing with the people after they've come back from exile, after they've returned to the land in Judah. So they kind of roughly follow there. And today we're in Hosea. And if you have Mark Dever's Old Testament book, his title for the sermon that he preached was Hosea, What is Love? Well, you can read his major lessons that he has. I wrote them down there in the point two of the outline. So you can read that. I don't want to just rehash what you've got sitting on your shelf. But as you read through Hosea, one of the prominent themes that comes up, that you kind of have to put the pieces together to make sense of, is that love is God's commitment, and it's going to be a sacrificial love. You know, in that theme, that idea of sacrificial love, I never saw the movie back when I was in, I don't know when it came out, junior high or high school, but at all our little school functions, there was a song that was popular. It was by a group called Meatloaf, and it was called I Would Do Anything for Love. Does anybody ever remember that? I Would Do Anything for Love. Thank you. Yes. Okay. Some of us grew up in the pagan world, and I guess some of you grew up in an unpagan world, maybe. Different. Well, the song says, I would do anything for love, but I won't do that. And, you know, it's playing up the high school dances and stuff. And I asked my friends, what in the world is he talking about? And they said, well, it's from the movie Dracula. And Dracula falls in love with this human girl, and he says, I would do anything for love, but I won't do that. And he wouldn't, you know, essentially bite her neck and turn her into a vampire so that she would live forever. Because his love to her was greater than his desire for himself. And so even there, in this movie that I don't recommend to anyone, is this theme of love costing. Love costing me. It's costing him his happiness. It's costing him the girl that he loves, because he's saying, I won't do that. In a broken, fallen world where everything's fractured, it's going to cost to love a sinner. It's going to cost God to love the people of Israel. And so Hosea starts out in chapter 1 saying, Hosea, you are my prophet, you are my spokesman. And if you remember when we went through the prophets last summer, the major prophets, we talked about the prophets a lot of time don't just have a message. A lot of times they are the message. There's a drama that God's playing out. And so you've got Isaiah walking around without clothes because he's going to be skinned. He's a picture of what it's going to look like when the armies come in and strip Israel of everything. They're going to make it out alive, but it's going to cost them everything. They're going to be stripped of everything. And here you've got Hosea playing out the picture. He is the picture. He is the message of God loving his people. And so he says in chapter 1, Hosea, you're going to take this woman who is a daughter of harlotry. She's a whore. Now, I don't know if that means that she actually was a prostitute making money off of it, or if it means that she was known in town as having, just being a loose woman who offered herself to everybody and went with to whoever's bed she was with. So that's not clear, but what's clear is, and you look up the word only occurs like three other times outside of Hosea. But it's this picture of a woman whose heart is bent in this direction, bent to fulfill these sexual lusts, bent to go after these other men. And God says, Hosea, that's your wife. Go get her. And you can imagine what kind of scandal this would be in town. You can imagine what kind of scandal it would be for the prophet of God. You're living in this town where everybody knows she is a whore. She sleeps around with everybody. And the prophet of God is supposed to go marry her. It's apples and oranges here. The man who's supposed to be the righteous man of Israel, the one who's supposed to be the messenger of God himself, the mouthpiece of God himself, is going to marry her. And you can imagine how this is going to spread around from house to house, and pretty soon the whole town's abuzz about it. And they say, is this really true? Surely not. But sure enough, he takes her to be his wife. And in chapter 1, they get married. They have kids. And it turns out that he's a picture. His life is a picture. And even the children are going to be part of this drama that's unfolding to say, Israel, you are the unfaithful bride. This is a message that you're going to watch. This is a message that's going to live with you. He's going to live next door to you. He's going to be a reminder to you that you are the unfaithful bride. Just to review briefly the history of what's happening here, so you kind of understand a little bit more of Hosea's message. Israel gets saved out of Egypt. We'll pick it up there. Israel gets saved out of Egypt. They come in. God leads them into the promised land by the hand of Moses through the wilderness. And then Joshua takes them into the promised land. They're ruled by judges for a while. Then King David is appointed as king over the people in the promised land. He sits on the throne. Solomon sits on the throne after him. After Solomon, the kingdom splits in two. And so you've got a northern kingdom with its capital in Samaria. You've got a southern kingdom and its capital is Jerusalem. A lot of times, this northern kingdom is called Ephraim because that's one of the most prominent tribes that lives there. A lot of times, it's called Israel as opposed to Judah. And the southern kingdom is referred to as Judah because that's the prominent tribe that's there. Now, sometimes the word Israel is still used to refer to everybody that comes from the 12 tribes of Israel. So a lot of times you gotta ask yourself, okay, is he talking to the northern kingdom or is he talking to all of the people of Israel when he uses the word Israel? Well, in chapter 1, I think that's the case here. He's talking to, he's addressing both kingdoms. If you don't have that straight in your head, you'll be all confused by the time you get to the end of the chapter. Because it looks like he's going to save some, it looks like he's going to destroy some, it looks like he's going to destroy some, and there's no hope for them after that. And then you read through, and it looks like he's going to execute his judgment and his punishment, but then there's hope for them after that. So when he's talking in chapter 1, he tells Hosea, take this wife of whoredom, have children of whoredom, because the land commits great whoredom by forsaking the Lord. So they have a child, they have a son. And God tells them in verse 4, call him Jezreel, because in just a little while I will punish the house of Jehu for the blood of Israel. And I will put an end to the kingdom of the house of Israel. He's going to put an end to the kingdom of the house of Israel. Here, he's talking about the northern kingdom. Because right below that, it's starting in verse 6, there's a daughter who's born. Call her name No Mercy. Because I will no more have mercy on the house of Israel to forgive them at all. But I will have mercy on the house of Judah. And I will save them by the Lord their God. So you see, he's saying, there's one house, and I think he means house, this northern kingdom. They're done. The end has come. The Assyrians are coming. For the house of Judah, the southern kingdom, there's hope. You're going to read 12 chapters of not a lot of hope. It doesn't look good. It's going to be a rough time, but there is going to be mercy for the house of Judah. So in chapter 1, we see the northern kingdom is going to come to an end. In chapter 3, he makes it clear that there's going to be an abandonment for a time. God's going to abandon his people. But then he will redeem them. In chapter 3, he says, can somebody read verses 1 through 5? Read that whole. Now, he doesn't say explicitly here, but I think this is the same woman. He says, go again, and you're going to have to love this woman. You know, this is still a picture of God with his people. Hosea's wife has run off somewhere. Where she went, I don't know. But she got herself in some trouble. And now she's having to sell herself on the auction block. And he says, okay, go again. Get your wife again. So Hosea the righteous man of God, the prophet of God. For the second time now, he's got to go get his wife. He already got her the first time. They've had all these children. She's abandoned him. He's the one that's got to come up with this cash and go down to the auction block, and he's got to buy her back. He's essentially acting just like the Ruth and Boaz story. He's redeeming her. She owes money to somebody, and she's getting sold as an indentured servant because of it. And so Hosea, her husband, her closest relative, her closest committed kin, is going to go redeem her out of slavery. So he goes down to the auction block and he buys her back and sits her down and says, look, you can't do this again. Don't play the harlot. Don't play the whore. Don't go after another man. Dwell here and be committed to me and be faithful just as I am going to be to you. And he says, this is a picture of what's going to happen to Israel. They've departed from the Lord. They have gone after other gods. And they're going to have to dwell a long time without king, without prince, without sacrifice. They're going to be cut off from their own king. They're going to be cut off from their own temple. They're going to be cut off. There's not going to be any priests who are ministering. There's not going to be any king of Israel who's going to be leading them. And sure enough, within the 150 years, what happens to the southern kingdom? Well, in 722, the northern kingdom, the Assyrians come in, wipe them out. The Assyrians keep moving south, and they get turned back. But eventually the Assyrians and then the Babylonians after them, they don't get turned back when they come down in 586. They come down to Jerusalem and they overthrow the city. And they ship them off to Babylon. Which is where we're at in Daniel, right? Everybody's off in exile. That's where we are in the story for Daniel. And so the very thing that Hosea has been telling them comes to pass. The very picture of the wife, the bride, the whore who belongs to God is taken off. And she's got to dwell without king, without prince, without sacrifice, without the temple, without the priest. But there's a day coming when the Lord is going to bring her back. And we see in here, just like, I mean, this has got to be heart-wrenching for Hosea. I mean, if nothing else, as you read in Ezekiel, for the sake of his name and the shame that it costs him to love this woman has got to be a burden on his shoulders. The love that he has for her has got to be a burden. Look, and here's where, again, the prophet is the picture of God's love. And we see in, let's see, chapter 11, verse 8, listen to the heart of God as he's talking about his people Israel. In chapter 11, he called Israel out of Egypt. And he says in verse 2, the more they were called, the more they went away. They kept sacrificing to the Baals and burning offerings to idols. They kept worshiping other gods. They would not be faithful. They went after every other god and goddess under heaven, but they wouldn't be faithful to me. Even though it was me teaching Ephraim to walk, taking them up by their arms, they didn't know that it was I who healed them. I drew them. I led them with cords of kindness and bands of love. I became as one who eases the yoke on their jaws. I bent down to them and I fed them. They shall not return to the land of Egypt, but Assyria shall be their king because they refused to return to me. The sword will rage against their cities and consume the bars of their gates, devour them because of their own counsels. My people are bent on turning away from me, and though they call out to the Most High, He will not raise them up at all. God, in His anger with them, gives them over to their sin. He says, you want to go after these other gods? I will let the people come in and take you over. I will let the... You want to go after the gods of Assyria? Bring them on. Sit under their yoke. Take their yoke upon. Put His wedding ring on. See how you like that. And He gives them over to it. And in the same breath that He's spelling out His anger with them, His frustration, in the same breath He says, how can I give you up, O Ephraim? How can I hand you over, O Israel? How can I make you like Admah and treat you like Zeboim? Which those two cities are paired up with Sodom and Gomorrah in Genesis. They're both destroyed as Sodom and Gomorrah. My heart recoils within me and my compassion grows warm and tender. I will not execute my burning anger and I will not again destroy Ephraim. For I am God and not a man, the Holy One in your midst, and I will not come in wrath. And let me say as a side note there, as you're thinking about evangelism, it is not wrong to turn to a person and say, the Lord loves you. You are wayward, and yet He loves you. Sometimes I see little articles here and there that say, if you want to get evangelism right, you have to dwell on the law of God condemning a man. And when they see their sin, then they'll be ready to look for a Savior. Which is completely true. That's completely true. But it's also true that the prophet of God is speaking to a wayward, unbelieving, adulterous people. And part of His message is, oh, how the Lord loves you. And it does break His heart right here. That He made a people, a part of His creation, who refuses to worship Him, refuses to have a relationship with Him, and goes after all these other gods, even though He pours out grace upon grace, day after day, sustaining the very breath in their lungs, granting them life here on His earth. And so the love of God, I put on the enduring themes there at the bottom. Hosea has this, he holds this tension through the whole book that there is this fierce wrath of God that is furious with sin. He is furious with the sinners. And the love of God pities the sinner and wants to have mercy upon them. And so Hosea doesn't really answer how are these things going to get fixed? How is this deliverance going to happen? Well, he gives us indications. And here we're just going to fire through a couple verses. In chapter 1, verse 7, he said, "I will have mercy on the house of Judah, and I will save them by the Lord their God. I will not save them by bow or sword, by war, or by horses, or by horsemen." He says, "I will save them." In chapter 14, at the very end, in verse 4, he says, "I will heal their apostasy. I will love them freely. I will be like the dew to Israel." And it's in that 14 verse 4, "I will heal their apostasy," that is about the clearest hope of the gospel that's in Hosea. About the clearest answer of how do all these pieces fit together? How is God going to execute judgment and justice, punish the people for their wickedness, abandon them to their ways, and yet he's going to have mercy on them? And he's going to name one of the Hosea's kids, call him Jezreel, because God will plant his people. And in verse 6 in this chapter, when God plants his people, his shoots are going to spread out. He's going to branch out. He's going to be a fruitful, luxurious vine in Israel. In chapter 2, he says, after I punish them, then in chapter 2, verse 14, I will allure her. I will woo my people back to me. I will speak tenderly to her. In those days shall be like when I brought them out of Egypt, when they first came to the land and were multiplying and fruitful. And no longer will you call me my... In that day you will call me my husband. No longer will you call me my Baal. No longer is there going to be a mixture in their heads of thinking that they're following the Lord, when in reality their hearts are far from Him. And they're confusing worshiping Baal, worshiping God, just like us. No longer are you going to confuse the idols of your heart with worshiping God. No longer are you going to be a people who are moral outwardly, or your life is put together in some fashion, when in the deceits of your heart you don't realize the need. There's a day coming, he says, when you will be betrothed in faithfulness to the Lord. Because, verse 17, I will remove the names of Baal from your mouth. The Lord's going to fix the heart. From it overflows everything from life. Out of the treasure of the heart, the mouth speaks. The Lord's going to put a new treasure in their heart, so that out of their mouth is going to come worship of God. He will abolish the bow, the sword from the land. He's going to give them the peace they've been waiting for. So how does all this come to pass? Well, Matthew gives us a hint when he says of Jesus, "Out of Egypt I have called my son." He says, that was about Jesus. There's going to come a huge expense to God. A day that he has to bear all the reproach and all the shame. The shame from that it's going to cost him to love a sinful, adulterous bride and buy her back out of slavery, but not just out of slavery like Hosea bought Gomer, out of a slavery of her heart, a slavery, Jesus says in John, if anybody sins, they're a slave to sin. He's purchasing our souls out of a soul slavery. As with Hosea, there's a price to be the faithful husband. There's a price of shame that he has to bear. There's a cost to his life that he's going to bear. And a really sweet deal for everybody who